Hey guys, we are Emma and Jessica. Welcome to our podcast, MSR Files, an X-Files podcast. In this episode, we're going to go over Sleepless. We'll go through it scene by scene and discuss while interjecting with our own thoughts. Hope you enjoy.
Okay, so this one was written by Howard Gordon and directed by Rob Bowman.
So we start off in New York City. It's 11:23 p.m. and with that old, like, standard definition VHS shot of Dr. Saul Grissom is lying on the couch watching the telly, kind of gets up and notices something's not quite right, like, at his door. He opens it and there is a massive fire outside. So he runs to the phone and dials 911. This is that he's trapped in his apartment and there's a fire, and they confirm his address. He's like, oh, are you at 700 East 56th Street? And he says, yes, apartment 606. Hurry. Well, for God's sake, hurry. So he goes and grabs a fire extinguisher as the flames just kind of keep on coming. They consume the room and he starts to choke. And then we cut to firefighters who are running up the stairs in the building, who are passing everybody who's evacuating. And then the camera stops and focuses on one man in particular, a little bit of foreshadowing, who stops and looks back up. And we see that he has a scar on the back of his neck. So the fire chief, you know, dude's in charge.
Captain?
Is like, oh, this is Lieutenant Reagan.
Captain? Oh, he's Lieutenant.
Oh, yeah, Lieutenant, yeah. Listen.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, so, yeah, Lieutenant. It's Lieutenant Reagan. We have an alarm in apartment 606. Let's confirm that location. 606. And they're on the phone, confirms it, and he says that it's cold, but let's go in anyway. So they go into the apartment, and there's no flames. The apartment's fine, but they find Grissom's dead body lying against the wall, and one of the fire folk is just like, oh, he looks dead. It's like, oh, no shit.
Oh, well.
He wouldn't just be sitting there like dead stairs.
Imagine, like, you've just died. Your soul's leaving your body, but you're still hovering around, and then you just see this dipshit fireman be like, oh, it looks dead.
Like,
I'd be like, really? That's your reaction to my fucking death? I'd be so pissed off.
So after the opening credits, Mulder opens a paper at his apartment and a tape falls out along with Dr. Grissom's article about his death being circled. And he's got that funky pink shirt on. It's like 90s tucked into his jeans.
His salmon shirt.
And he's
not got any socks on.
No socks. Ick. No socks, but shoes.
Such an ick. But also, guys that wear trainer socks when they've got, like, that's okay if you're wearing shorts.
Yeah.
If you've got long sleeved
long legs.
If you've got, like, proper trousers on, full length trousers, you should be wearing proper socks. Like, that's just, ugh.
Yeah.
I don't know why, because, like, if girls wear, like, it doesn't bother me, but I'm like, you're allowed to see a girl's ankle. I feel like you shouldn't see a guy's ankle if he's wearing trousers. Like, it's okay when he's wearing shorts, but get your proper socks on. Like, just ick.
We're going, like, reverse Victorian times. I'm like, I don't want to see a man's ankle.
Yeah, exactly.
Get it away. And then I made a wee note. We have the wee guest starring, and it pops up with Mitch Pileggi's name and Nicholas Lee. And I always remember thinking this, like, the first time around. When those names popped up, you knew it was going to be a good episode.
Remember I had that dream that Nicholas Lee died, but he was called Christopher in my dream. And that's how I knew. And I woke up, I was like, because at first I thought he was dead. And then I was like, wait a minute. He's not Christopher. And I was like, oh, that was a dream. And he's still alive.
But the actual Christopher Lee fell differently. He died. Really old guy.
Yay!
He's dead. Yeah.
That must be why I was in my dream.
There we go. Mystery solved. So Mulder puts the tape in the recorder, and then we transition to Skinner's office where they're both listening to it, and it's a recording of the 911 call. Mulder says the article makes no mention of the fire, and Skinner's just like, yes, Agent Mulder, I can read.
Such a dick for no reason.
He is. And he just pushes the paper back to him. Mulder says that Grissom's company had a number of government contracts which would place this investigation within the Bureau's jurisdiction. And then Skinner is like, but that's not why you want the assignment. And Mulder then goes on to say that I think the circumstances surrounding Grissom's death warrant a closer look. Called NYPD, but they won't talk to him unless they've got the Attorney General to sign off on it. Skinner asks where he gets the tape and says that presumably someone has led him to believe that there's more that's going on than what has been reported. And then Mulder is just like, my only source, what I have ever trusted, is dead. Like, okay, so dramatic. Mulder. And Skinner's like, yeah, okay, I'll look into this further and let you know. But there's still some bitch work for you to do, so.
Yeah.
Anyway. So yeah, Mulder's been left with 24 hours of wiretap that needs transcribed. So Mulder's listening to this wiretap, and then
here comes the boy!
So this is our first introduction to Alex Krycek.
He looks like such a drip.
He does.
Born time.
Yeah. He just looks like a wee boy. I'm like, you shouldn't be here, sir. So he hands a file to Mulder, says it's 302 and that Edie Skinner just approved it. And Mulder's like, there's a mistake here. There's been another agent assigned to the case. And he's like, oh, that would be me, Alex Krycek. And said it before, I'll say it again, no wonder he turned bad. Because right here, he holds out his hand for Mulder.
He was already bad!
It's just a little bit of a decision to
know. Yeah.
And Mulder totally patches him. That is one. Or trying to kill someone. What a wee shame. Poor guy. And Mulder's just been a little whiny thing about it. He's like, Skinner didn't say anything about taking on a new partner. Krycek's like, well, wasn't Skinner? Like, I opened the file tours before your request, so technically it's my case. And Mulder's like, oh, you already talked to the police? And he's like, yep. And whips out his wee notebook and he's hung up on the officer in charge a few minutes ago, and the detective name is Wharton. He says that it turns out Grissom called 911 to report a fire, and Mulder's like, I heard the tape. So yeah, he spat the dummy about. He's being a moody little bitch here, mm-hmm. Like, grow up. Krycek then goes on to say, did you hear that forensics found a spent fire extinguisher on the floor and Grissom's prints were all over it? The wall and floor of his living room were covered with ammonium phosphate. And then Mulder goes on to say, but no trace of a fire. And Krycek's like, nope, not even a burnt match. Mulder asks if that's all he knows. And Krycek says, yep, so far, what do you think it means? And then Mulder's having none of it. He's like, I appreciate the show and tell. I don't want you to take this personally, but I work alone. Like, lone wolf.
Alone. What's a lone wolf gotta do to get out around here?
Yeah. So he's like, I'll string things out with Skinner. And Krycek's like, no, Agent Mulder, it's my case. He's like, I may be green, but I had the case first, and I'm not gonna give it away so quickly. And Mulder's just like, all right, I'll tell you what. He's like, I've got a little bit of work to finish up around here. He's like, why don't you go and requisition us a car, and I'll meet you there. And Krycek, like, can't quite believe it. He's like, oh, that's all? Like, you don't have a problem with us working together? And Mulder's like, it's your party. And he goes away all happy. He's like, I'll go get the car. But yeah, like, the look on Mulder's face, though, is like, get a grip of yourself, boy. You look so gutted. And I'm like, you are a grown-ass man in your 30s. Get over it.
I would be too, though, if I was, thought I was working alone and then I had to deal with a twat that I didn't like. I'd be like, ruined my shift.
Yeah. So the scene cuts to Scully, who's teaching an autopsy class. She is going on about the effects of electrocution on the body and how it causes death and whatnot. just whatnot. Just casually like that.
That's the least scientific.
Yeah. I get bothered trying to write it all down. I'm like, So a man like bursts in through the door. He's like, oh, sorry to interrupt, Agent Scully. We have a call from a George Hale. This is urgent. And she drops everything immediately and she's like, right, I'm gone.
Do you remember this time when we were recording what George Hale references?
We did with the elves or some shit.
Yeah. This time you remember.
Yeah, I remember it now. And like, Scully doesn't even say hi when she answers the phone. She's just like, where are you? So she obviously knows she's talking to Mulder. And I love that for them. Yeah. Mulder says that he's at National Airport and asks Scully how she'd like to join him in New York for an autopsy. And she's just like, what's going on?
Autopsy, is that what you're calling it? It's
a euphemism. Euphemism, is that the right word? I don't know.
I don't know why they're doing it. If that's the euphemism they're using, that's not the best, is it?
No, what word am I thinking of?
Euphemism? Yeah. You're saying like, on an autopsy. Like, what exactly are you doing? They did the mesh. they did the monster mesh.
Nice. So yeah, Scully is like, what's going on? And Mulder's like, oh, I was hoping you could tell me. And she's just like, bitch. He's like, I haven't missed this. She's like, I can't do it today. Like, my last class isn't until 4:30. And Mulder's like, oh, that's fine. They're going to have the ME wrap up the body to go. And she's just like, Mulder. And he's like, you'll get it by 5:00. And of course, she just lets out a sigh. She's like, what? The name. So she still drops everything and goes along with it with him. And yeah, I love that for her. She deserves better, but I love that for her.
Yeah.
So we cut to Grissom's sleep disorder clinic. Mulder is there and there's a lady like walking through it with him. I don't know if it's like a researcher, doctor, whatever. I don't know if it actually says. But she's explaining how Grissom's research, work, whatever it was he was doing, revolutionized the way that we think about sleep. Mulder asks how many other kinds of sleep disorder to treat. She says there's 38 dysomnias and parasomnias, and Dr. Grissom treated them all with an unprecedented success ratio. Mulder says that maintaining that kind of batting average must have taken its toll. The doctor says that excellence demands certain sacrifices. Mulder asks if he ever showed any signs of psychological stress. She's just like, not really, except for his own occasional bout of insomnia. And Mulder's like, but he was never delusional. You're like, what question, Mulder?
I don't know. I've got insomnia and I'm pretty delusional. The amount of shit I dream and think's real.
Yeah, yeah, this doctor's just like, no, of course not. So they stop outside a patient's room and they can see through like a monitor and there's like a chart. They see the person through the monitor and there's a chart readout underneath it. Mulder asks, what's his story? And the doctor's like, basically he has night terrors, so they're trying to modify his brain waves externally so he can sleep better. Mulder asks how they do it. And the doctor says electrostimulation of the occipital lobe creates visual and auditory hallucinations. And that was a mouthful to try and process this time of night. And Mulder asks, oh, so it's actually possible to alter somebody's dreams? And the doctor's like, in theory, yes. And Mulder's like, oh my god, he is shook. So Mulder's walking out the clinic. Krycek is strutting up a storm because he's raging. And he's like, I don't appreciate being ditched like somebody's bad day. And he says that he's peed off his cab. Mulder's like, sorry if I hurt your feelings. It's been a proper death. So you can think these things, Mulder, about somebody you don't want to work with, but you shouldn't really say them to them. And yeah, Krycek's like, where do you get off like cobbing this attitude? Like, you don't even know the first thing about him. And fair play to him being like, you're being an absolute dick to me for no reason. That is fair enough. And Mulder's like, exactly. And then Krycek's, he's in a big sook. He's like, oh, back at the academy, some guys used to make fun of you. And Mulder's like, oh, stop it, you'll hurt my feelings. I'm like, yeah, they will.
But you actually will, yeah. Yes. So don't.
So yeah, he's still being a big sook and he's like, oh, there's some of us who followed your work, believed in what you were doing, blah, blah, blah.
Playing him.
Yeah, playing him big time. And Mulder's phone rings, which he answers, like totally patching Krycek again. And I made a wee note saying, again, no wonder he said, fuck all y'all, I'm trying to kill him.
He was already working his SMM. I'll stop making excuses for him.
I like to think his normal to like villain arc was just this one episode.
No.
It was two patched handshakes. He was like, fuck you.
Fuck you all. I'm going to enter a conspiracy against humankind or the alien.
I like to entertain every scenario, even if they are delusional. So it's Scully on the phone, and of course Mulder drops everything to speak to her, and she says that Grissom didn't die from cardiac arrest, and that she thinks that Mulder should come down here and take a look for yourself, and that she hasn't even started on the chest and abdomen yet, and she'll have a lot more to tell him by then. Mulder says he can make it in 2 hours, and he reaches for the door of the car, and Krycek just like holds up the keys. He's like, so where are we going? It's like, where are we going, bestie?
Nowhere. Go home.
It's like a grumpy old man with like a wee boy.
And you're just like, get home.
That is what it's like.
So the scene flashes to Scully's autopsy bay. She places a large organ on the scale. Mulder asks, he comes in and he asks if it's spleen or pancreas. And Scully answers that it's the stomach and that she was just about to start on it. She stops when Krycek appears behind him and she's kind of like, Mulder, who's this?
You're cheating on me.
Have you betrayed me and replaced me? Yeah, so Mulder introduces Krycek and says that they're working a case together. Scully says it's good to meet you, and she offers him a smile, and he holds out his hand, and he gets that. She patches him, she just walks on by. Yeah, so what a wee shame. And I couldn't quite tell when I was watching it, because the sun was coming in the window, but I'm pretty sure Mulder looks so proud of her.
He does, I'm pretty sure he does.
Yeah, it's like, grow up. Brilliant. Okay, so Scully goes on top of the autopsy, and Krycek can't handle it. He's looking like he's got a spew in the background, and he can't quite look at the dead body, and they both do not look impressed. And I'm pretty sure Mulder even...
Yeah, even though he's squeamish too.
Yeah, exactly. So Scully says that this condition that the body is in generally occurs several hours after death. It's caused by a coagulation of muscle proteins when the body's exposed to extremely high temperatures. Mulder's like, like fire?
Oh, and Scully fire. Says
the degree of limb flexion is observed exclusively in burn-related victims. And Krycek pipes up, was like, but there was no fire. And Scully's like, yeah, no burns to indicate either. But when they opened up the skull, they found external hemorrhages, which can only be caused by intense heat. Somehow this man suffered all the secondary, but none of the primary physiological signs of being in a fire. So yeah, they've got like their heads together, whispering away, and Krycek's in the background, be like, wait, what are you talking about? They don't leave me out.
Pretty much what happened.
But Mulder's in the zone. Yeah, he's in the zone. He's like, oh, any theories, Scully? She says that she can't even begin to explain what caused it. It's almost as if, and then she kind of trails off, and they're so close together here. It's so cute. And Mulder prompts her. He's like, wow, like, what do you think? And Scully's like, it's almost as if his body believed that it was burning. And Krycek's just in the background like, oh, damn. Crazy shit.
Damn.
Yeah, damn. We cut to Brooklyn in New York. A man is watching like a QVC type show in his apartment and he looks really, really tired. And the camera pans around and sees a scar on his neck. So somebody enters and says that they left the door open, Willie. And the man stands up and calls him preacher. We find out this is Augustus Cole. And he says that it's not a good idea to leave your door open in this neighborhood. You never know who's going to drop by. And then they go on to talk, like asking how they've been and everything. And this guy, Henry, is basically saying he's trying to forget the faces, but no luck. And like, what does it matter? They're all going to hell anyway. Cole's like, where do you think we've been for the last 24 years? So Henry then stops the chit-chat and asks what Preacher wants and says that he killed them, didn't he? That he saw Grissom on the telly. So Cole says that they had to pay and they all have to answer for what they did over there and they can't get away from it. So the camera pans around and there are like apparitions that appear in the apartment of Vietnamese people in various states of like being injured, bloody, like they're holding guns. So Cole starts to read scripture. And they hold up their guns, poised to shoot. And Cole tells Henry that it's all right, it's all over now. And then Henry just closes his eyes and accepts it. And the apparitions shoot him. So he collapses back, presumably dead, but there's no blood or sign of injury on his body. The scene goes to the FBI headquarters. Mulder and Krycek look at the photos of the murdered man, Henry, on the bulletin board. And Krycek reads out his name, says it's Henry Willig. He was unemployed, lived on disability. Police found no indication of forced entry or struggle. No abrasions or contusions on the body. And cause of death is being listed as a burst aneurysm. Mulder asks why his friend at Homicide called them, and Krycek says that it's because the medical examiner called him. The autopsy revealed 43 small internal hemorrhages and skeletal fragments, which just doesn't happen spontaneously, not without some corresponding external trauma. It's like a whole mouthful. So Mulder asks what the ME has to say about it. Krycek says that he didn't know. If he didn't know otherwise, he could have sworn there were gunshot wounds. Mulder then notices the scar on Henry's neck and asks about it. And Krycek says that according to his medical history, the only surgery he ever had was an appendectomy. And Mulder, with the jokes, he's like, well, unless they got his appendix through his neck. It's like, haha.
So inappropriate, as always.
Gee, shit. It's like, there was no need for that. And Krycek's kind of scrambling. He's like, try to figure out where it come from. And he says that maybe it happened during Vietnam. Willie did a tour with the Marines in 1970. And he says that he's sure they didn't keep the best records. And Mulder kind of perks up. He's like, ooh. Willig was a Marine. So where do all Marines receive basic training on the East Coast? And Krycek answers, Paris Island. And Mulderney says that's where Grissom was stationed from 1968 to 1971, which means that he and Willig were there at the same time 24 years ago. We cut to a computer screen in the FBI library in New York, where Mulder finds the info for Henry's troop and says that of the original 13 members, he's only one or two survivors. And Krycek's like, until yesterday.
It's like, they should be best friends with their inappropriate jokes.
No need. I know, yeah. So Mulder says that this leaves us one person who can tell us what happened on Paris Island, and he points to the name Augustus D. Cole. Cut to the VA Medical Center in North Orange, New Jersey. And the doctor says that they've been supervising Mr. Cole's treatment since he admitted them 12 years ago, and I'm afraid they won't find him very cooperative. Mulder just says, I want to ask a few questions about his military service. And the doctor says he didn't respond very well to authority figures. Mulder asks, is that why he put him in isolation? And he said, oh, we've had to house Mr. Cole in this section of the ward because he keeps interfering with our treatment of the other patients. And that he was disrupting their sleep patterns. And Mulder and Krycek share a look. And the doctor says that psychiatric patients especially, it's critical that the circadian cycles be strictly maintained. And Mulder sort of interrupts him. He's like, excuse me, but how could Cole disrupt their sleep? And the doctor doesn't answer, just like turns to the door and calls out to Mr. Cole, but they find him gone. So they go to reception. The receptionist is like, you discharged them a few days ago. And the doctor's like, I most certainly did not. Like, huffing and puffing. Like, don't you think I would remember if I did? And she's just like, fuck you. And she's like, well, I was on shift and it's right here in proof. You signed it. And then she's like, that is your signature, isn't it? And I'm like, I love this one for her.
Fuck you.
Yeah. Good for her. So they all look at the file. The doctor looks bamboozled.
I just bamboozled Chandler, which isn't a sexual thing.
So they're looking at the file, which has Cole's picture. Mulder tells Krycek to get his face out on the wire. This is his phone rings, and it is X. So X says that, Mr. Mulder, I have obtained some information that may shed some light on your current work. You must exercise discretion when we meet. If anyone follows you, I won't be there. Mulder is sort of looking at the file, but he looks...
Get fucked.
He looks over at... Krycek is looking at the file. He looks over while Mulder's on the phone, and it kind of looks like he's almost as if... Looking at him as if he's like, is he going to fucking leave me again? But also, it's just maybe he's just being sneaky. He's like...
He is. He's a sneaky little rat.
Yes, little rat bastard. So before we find out he's evil, though, it could be like, oh, just he's my hero. Want to look out for him, see what he's doing, copy him. But no, he's a rat bastard. Then we cut to an old abandoned warehouse. Mulder is meeting with X, so he calls out, "Who are you?" And X says, "Who I am is irrelevant." Mulder asks why he's trying to help him, and X is just like, "Do you think I want to be here, Agent Mulder?" He's like, "I don't want to be here." Mulder's just like, "What is this?" And X says that it's data from a top secret military project. One of the idea that sleep was the soldier's greatest enemy. Mulder's like, "Oh, of course, someone was conducting sleep deprivation experiments on Paris Island." And X says that it wasn't deprivation, it was eradication. Mulder asks why, and X says, "Why else? To build a better soldier. Sustained wakefulness dulls fear, heightens aggression, and science had just put a man on the moon, so they looked to science to win a losing war." And Mulder concludes that Willig and Cole were the lab rats. X says that they were the lab rats with the highest kill ratio in the Marine Corps, 4,000 plus confirmed kills for a 13-man squad. Mulder asks if he thinks Cole's behind what's happening now, and X is just like, "I'm not here to do your thinking, Agent Mulder. Like, all I know is that Augustus Cole hasn't slept in 24 years, and there's someone else you should see, a member of the squad who was reportedly killed in action." Mulder says that he thought Cole was the last, and X says that his name's on the envelope. So he goes to leave, and Mulder asks how he can contact him, and X is like, "Nope, you can't." And Mulder's been a bit needy, he's like, "Oh, we still need more." And then X is just like, "You don't get it, do you?" Like, "Closing the X-Files, separating you and Scully was only the beginning. The truth is still out there, but it's never been more dangerous." So,
never heard that before in X-Files.
Yeah. Every time they say that.
Or not in the drinking game. "Oh, it's never been more dangerous. You've never been closer to the truth."
Yeah.
Shut up.
So X then goes on to say, "The man we both knew paid for that information with his life, a sacrifice I'm not willing to make."
We'll see.
Which, fair enough. I don't blame him for that.
Not true, though.
And that is the end of my notes.
Okay. So then we see Mulder waiting in the car, and he pushes the envelope that he's received from X underneath the car seat. And then Krychek gets in and says, "Where are you?" Someone matching Cole's description just robbed a drugstore in Queens, and the place is located under a motel just around the corner. Mulder asks if he's alive. Krychek getting patched by Mulder is my religion. Because like, he asked him a question, he's like, "Just ignore that."
It's true, that buzzing, annoying buzzing.
Yeah. Krychek says that Augustus Cole was still alive when the Nightman saw him, and then asks again where he was, and gets patched again. Just doesn't care. So then we cut to Mulder and Krychek entering the hotel or motel, whatever it was. So Wharton says that he's been waiting for them. He tried to hold SWAT back, but they're getting a little antsy because they just love to fucking shoot people. So
yeah.
He says that Cole didn't steal a dime. All he took from the drugstore was a bunch of pills. Then we hear three gunshots and a scream. So Mulder and Krychek bolt up the stairs. Best as fuck, boy! And Krychek says that there's an officer down. So one of the SWAT guys says that they've got two officers down and requests emergency vehicles. So then we cut to outside the motel, or hotel, whatever it was, and we see Cole. Just, holiday. Yeah, motel, hotel, holiday. We see Krychek. No, we see, oh my God, we see Cole just leaning against the wall, looking all shitty. And we get some excellent music from Mark Snow. So Krychek asks Mulder what's going on, and points out that the two officers shot each other. So then we flash to Scully typing at her computer, and we get a fucking voiceover. Basically, she's talking about the experimental neurological procedure that was done to induce a permanent state of waking. And she says that explains like the scar on the back of Henry Wilkes' neck, and that one should also be evident on Augustus Cole. And then she says that after the surgery, they were given a regimen of synthetic supplements to replenish the organic deficits caused by prolonged lack of sleep, and that it was consistent with the antidepressants that Cole robbed from the pharmacy, and that these drugs maintain serotonin levels in the blood, which serotonin is produced whilst you're asleep. And then Scully says, so while it is theoretically possible that this procedure greatly diminished the subject's need for sleep, she can neither quantify nor substantiate its success without further clinical evidence. So then the phone rings, and Scully answers the phone, and it's Mulder. And Mulder says, well, that second officer is still in a coma, so I don't think we can count on him to give us an answer. And it's just a classic insensitive comment from Mulder. Does not care that this guy might die.
Yeah.
And Scully says that she's been going over the reports that he faxed her and says they're incredible. And Mulder says, well, the military already sent troops to radioactive mushroom clouds. I guess they figured they had to top themselves, right? And I love this disdain for the military and all the fucked up shit that they did. So Scully says that the sleep eradication doesn't explain why the two officers shot themselves or the results of the autopsies for Willick and Grissom. And Mulder says that he learnt something at Dr. Grissom's clinic about what happens to a person cortex when you stimulate it with electricity. Scully says they experience mild visual and auditory hallucinations. Any first year med student could tell you that. Scully says. So then Mulder asks, what if the stimulus came from a remote source? What if Cole had somehow developed the ability to project his unconscious? And then Scully's like, are you suggesting that Cole killed these people with telepathic images? And I don't know why she's asking this at this point, because she should know fine well that's what he's saying. So Mulder says, just think about it.
He's at it.
All those years without REM sleep, maybe Cole built a bridge between the waking world and the dream world, a collective unconscious. And what if, by existing consciously in the unconscious world, he developed the ability to externalize his dreams and effectively alter reality? And Scully's just like, she's just like, even if that's right, you'll have a much better chance of finding Cole if you work up a profile and try to summarize his next move. And she's basically saying, like, stop being a lunatic and do some actual police work, Mulder. That's what you're paid for. Stop being a twat. So Mulder says, all right, I'll sharpen my pencils and I'll see you later. And just a little flirt. So Krycek calls Mulder over, and Mulder says that he'll be right there, and he's literally like, get the fuck, I'm trying to talk to my girlfriend. Ruining it. So then Mulder goes over and says, Mulder doesn't go over. He says to Scully that they're going to check out another member of the squad and see if he can tell them anything about Cole. And Scully says, sounds like your partner's working out, and she's so jealous. It's so cute.
Yeah.
So Mulder says he's all right. He could use a little more seasoning and some wardrobe advice from who? Not you, anyway, Mulder. But he's a lot more open to extreme possibilities than. And Scully cuts him off and says, "Than I was." And their stupid little smiles. So fucking sick for this. And Mulder says, "Than I assumed they would be." And Scully says, "Must be nice not having someone question your every move, poking holes in all your theories." And Mulder says, "Oh yeah, it's great. I'm surprised I put up with you for so long." And he stutters because he's all nervous. So there's a long pause because they're just like listening to each other breathing. And Scully says, "You better go. Yes, I'll read over this report again and see what I can come up with." And Mulder says, "Okay." And they're so lovesick. It's cute.
They are.
So then Mulder and Krycek walk into a diner, and the guy behind the counter, the Mulder's like, Salvador Matola, and he says, "You're gonna shoot me? You're gonna kill me?" I was like, "What the fuck, dude? Chill out." What happened to hey? How's your day going? Imagine just walking into a diner and the guy's like, "You gonna kill me?" No, can I get a cheeseburger? Chill out, my man. So Mulder says we're FBI, as if that's supposed to like calm him down, and says that they just want to talk, just want to ask some questions. And then he's like, "Why do you think we want to kill you?" And Matola's just like, "Don't know." And Mulder asks if he knows about Willick and Grissom. I feel like I didn't say that right. "Do you know about Willick and Grissom?" And Matola says that he read about it in the papers, and he just like kind of shrugs and like, "I guess they're killing us off." Mulder asks who, and asks if he can spare some few minutes. He says, "I guess so, I got a break coming up." And then he kind of says to himself, "Spare a few minutes, I guess," because like time's just endless to him because he never sleeps, and that must be horrible.
Yeah.
So then they're sat down together, and he says that the military told them that it'd be like living two lifetimes. At first, that was what it was like. Not having to sleep at all made us feel like nothing could touch us, you know? And says that they do 24-hour patrols, night ambushes, you know, that sort of thing. And Mulder asks, "And you never got tired?" And they said, "No, not enough to make..." They? You know what I mean? Matola says, "No, not enough to make us sleep. And nothing that the pills couldn't fix." Mulder asks if it was serotonin, and he says, "Yes." And Mulder asks how long it went on for, and Matola says, "Quite a while. Until we stopped taking orders from the company commander at Saigon." And Krycek says, "You mean until you went AWOL?" And Matola says something like that. And they said, "Who did you take orders from after that?" It just goes on for far too long. So Matola says they just made up their own missions as we went along, until it didn't matter anymore who we were killing. Farmers, women outside of Fubai, there was this school, they were just kids. And Krycek asks if no one ever tried to stop them, and he says, "No, sir." So Mulder says that they suspect that Augustus Cole may be behind the murders of Willick and Grissom. Matola asks, preacher, and then says that's what they used to call him because he was always reading from his Bible, and he said that they would be judged, basically their judgment day would come and that they would have to pay for what they were doing. So Mulder asked why Grissom though, because he was never out of the country, he wasn't even part of the squadron. And Matul says, sure he was, he made us what we are, him and Dr. Girardi. Mulder asks who Girardi is, and Matul says it's other doctor, the one who did the surgeries on us. It's because of him I haven't slept in 24 years. So fuck him. So Mulder and Krycek, we cut to Mulder and Krycek stuck in a traffic jam on the Long Island Expressway at rush hour. And Mulder says that they're going after Girardi. Cole sees himself as some kind of avenging angel. In his mind, everyone responsible for the atrocities, whether directly or indirectly, must be punished. Krycek asks why now after all these years. And Mulder says Fubai was one of the bloodiest massacres of the war, over 300 children slaughtered. But unlike My Lai, no US troops were ever charged. The 24th anniversary of the massacre was 2 days ago, and I hope to God this is all made up and that they're not using some massacre and turning into an X-Files thing, because that's just sick. Don't do that.
Yeah,
we weren't taught about the Vietnam War, but so I don't know, but better not be. I keep meaning to look it up and I keep forgetting, but I'm like, I swear to God, if they've done that, then that's bad. So then Mulder's phone rings, and of course it's Scully, because she literally cannot stay away from her spooky bitch for 2 seconds. So Mulder answers the phone, and Scully says, I think I found the Francis Girardi you're looking for. He's a professor of neurosurgery at Harvard. Mulder asks if she has his number for in Boston, and Scully says, yep, but he's coming to New York for Grissom's funeral tonight. He's arriving at the Bronx station on the 7:30 train. Mulder asks her to try have a photograph of him waiting for them at security desk so they know who they're looking for. And Scully's like, got it. It's like Krycek who, because Scully is his partner, doing all his work with him, and he's just ignoring that Krycek's just sitting right next to him. Does not give a fuck. So then we cut to Mulder and Krycek arriving at the train station, and they acquire the photograph from security and run to find Girardi. Mulder says, stay here, I'll cover you on the side. And then we pan for the station where we see Cole at Painful. And we then cut to Mulder, who basically thinks that he sees Girardi again off the train. I think this is what happens. So, And Mulder also thinks that he sees Cole behind Girardi.
Yeah.
He's getting on the train. So he freaks out and is like, Federal agent, drop your weapon. Because Girardi's got a gun, I think, in this vision. And Cole fires 4 shots, but he doesn't really. You know what I mean? This is like all Mulder's head.
Yeah.
But he does. And then Mulder's like trying to stop him and gets knocked over or something, I think. And Krycek, it all happens in a blur. But Krycek runs over to Mulder, who's got an exquisite tie on. And this boy just sits up and fucking screams, Girardi! Like some fucking lunatic.
So
he's like, where is he? And then Krycek's like, he's not here, bitch. Like, what are you talking about?
Hey, mate, what are you on?
And Mulder says that he saw him, and then Krycek's like, listen, dude, you were fucking shouting and waving your gun around like a crazy person, but Girardi never showed up. And Mulder says, nah, he was here. Just missed him. And Krycek's like, nah, bruh, he wasn't here. And he's like, I would have seen it. No one was here. So then we cut to the Metropolitan Transit Authority at Bronx Station. And there's a whole bunch of security people and like police looking over at CCTV footage. And Mulder says, okay, there's nothing here. Start with a small window of time, say 7:35 to 7:45. If you don't find anything in that time frame, then open it up 1 minute at a time. With all these cameras, we should have been able to see something. And then Krycek asks to talk for a second. And Mulder's like, what's up, dude? And... And Krycek says that he's still not answered his question. What happened? And then Mulder's like, I fucking told you, I saw Girardi. And then Krycek's like, listen, you just about killed someone back there. We both know I'm covering for you, keeping it between us. And then Mulder's like, fine, what do you want to know? And then Krycek says he wants to know the truth. And Mulder gets hard. So he said, there's something you're telling me, and I need to know. And Mulder says, it's just that his ideas are usually unpopular. And Krycek says, listen, dude, I told you, I want to believe. He's just like throwing in all these buzzwords, trying to get Mulder to open up.
Buzzwords.
Yeah. And so Mulder says he thinks Cole possesses the psychic ability to manipulate sounds and images to generate illusions that are so convincing they can kill. How's that for a theory? And then Krycek says, puts a whole new spin on virtual reality, but at least it begins to explain some things. And then the security officer calls Mulder back over, and then they see a car in the upper upper right corner of the screen. And this guy like points out to Mulder and he's like, do you see that? And he's like, yep. And then he says, it wasn't there 5 minutes ago. Mulder asks where it is and he says, track 17, a restricted part of the yard. So then we cut to Cole with Girardi and Girardi's asking like, what are you doing? This is crazy. You can't do this to me. And then he says he can't hold him responsible. And he's just following orders, just like you. And Cole says, the Lord hates the lying tongue. such a preacher sort of thing to say.
Yeah.
Girardi says, the truth. And then Cole just hits Girardi.
Whacks him.
And Cole says, the truth is what you did to us, what you made us do. And Girardi's like, no one made you do anything. You volunteered. And also, no one did make you do anything because you went off on your own. You just decided to start killing children and shit. So maybe chill the fuck out.
Yeah.
So Cole says, the righteous shall rejoice when he sees the revenge. I don't know why I'm going to think that he's got the cancer. He has the cancer. That's how it comes to me.
It speaks to me.
Yep. So then Girardi's like, who's it? Who's there? And Cole says, he shall wash his feet in the wicked. And Girardi says, who is it? I can't see you out of my glasses. And I say, all right, settle down, Velma. I can't see you out of my glasses.
Love it.
And Cole says, you don't need to see who it is that's coming. You know who it is. And then we see troops like walking by and they pick up scalpels. And Cole says, you shall pay as the judge has determined. We shall give life for life. Eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, burn for burn.
Okay.
Wind for wind. It keeps going.
It keeps going on.
Wind for wind, strike for strike. As he has disfigured a man, so shall he be disfigured. And he who kills a man shall be put to death. Honestly, who wrote this again? Howard Gordon.
Chris Carr.
No, it was Howard Gordon.
Oh, no, I'm thinking Dwayne Barry. I'm more ahead. Howard Gordon.
Fucking hell, Howard. Calm down.
He was on one that day. He was on a bad one. He was just going
Chris Carr was definitely in that room. That sounded like Chris and Chris Carr. Right?
Aaron, I think we're just blaming really
everything on Chris Carr. So then we see Mulder and Krycek driving in and we hear tires screeching even though they're going like 2 miles an hour. And they're like searching the place. They've got their classic X-Files torches. And then we spend a ridiculous amount of time on Girardi's glasses that they find broken on the ground. And then they hear Girardi screaming and Mulder's like, he's alive! Mulder runs after him and then they find him and he's like, oh, he's alive! And then he asks Krycek to put pressure on his wound at the back of his neck and radio for help. And so Krycek does that because he's a little bitch boy. And then Mulder basically fucks off to look for Cole.
Yeah, of course he does.
Yep. And we find Cole standing like on a ledge because they're like, it looks like it's in construction, that part of the track, eh? And like they're on an upper floor. So Mulder asks Cole to step away from the ledge. He says that he's a federal agent. And Cole says, go ahead, shoot me. And Mulder says, that's not what I'm here for. And he's literally the only person in law enforcement in America that doesn't want to shoot people and ask questions later. So Mulder puts down his gun and says that he just wants to talk for a few minutes and then he can do whatever he wants to do. And Cole says he's tired. Mulder says, I know. And then he's like, no, man, you don't
really
know.
Don't know.
You have no fucking idea. And Mulder says he's just asking for 1 minute of his time. And Cole says it's more than he can give. And he says his blood's boiling in his veins. I can feel the air stinging my skin. And Mulder says what the military did to you was wrong, but your testimony can help. And Cole says that they've cut out part of his brain, turned him into someone else, and that he can never get back what they took away from him. And he's going to stop them from taking any more. Then Krycek comes in, fucking with his gun out.
Yeah.
And Mulder like waving screams up. He's like, put the gun down! And tells him to get out of there. He's so over this loser. He's like, get the fuck away from my case, man. Yeah. And then Krycek sees Cole raising the gun. And when Mulder looks over, he sees that Cole's actually holding up a Bible. Mulder screams no and Krycek fires his gun twice, killing Cole. And then Cole says goodnight. I love how people always have time to get their dying words in shows and that. And then Krycek's like, he had a gun, he was gonna shoot you. And Mulder tells him like half-heartedly, he's like, you did the right thing. He's like, but not really, you're a murderer. So Mulder goes back to his car and he reaches under the seat to find that the file is gone. Ba-ba-bang. So he goes to Scully's office. Then we get super FBI headquarters, Washington, D.C. And Scully says that they've broken into her office, went through all her files on her computer, and she came as soon as like security called her, but the report was already gone. And then And by the way, they're standing so fucking close. They're like literally millimeters apart. And it's like, there's literally no need for this, but whatever. So Mulder says that someone went through a lot of trouble to steal both copies of the secret program that they were investigating. So Scully says, without the report as evidence, Skinner's not going to authorize an investigation. And then Mulder says, he says it's never been more dangerous. And Scully's like, Skinner? And he's like, no, the man who leaked us the report, the one who's been helping us. And Scully's like, oh my god, she actually met him? She gets so sucked into all this drama. And I'm just like, Scully, don't call for it. And Mulder says that X said that closing down the X-Files was just the beginning. That's that we've never been in greater danger.
Sure.
Never heard that before. And Scully asks, do you trust him? And Mulder can't answer. He's still not over his sugar daddy. He's like, listen. I just lost one of my loves. I can't move on so quickly. So then we cut to Krycek, who's sitting in front of three members of the consortium. And CSM, good old Drylip, says, do you know where he got this? And Krycek says, not yet, which means he's either found another source or another source has found him. And then he says, can he recommend something? And that he's outlined several countermeasures. Krycek's tie, still boring.
Mm-hmm.
So CSM asks, what about Scully? And Krycek says that reassigning her to different area, or like the two of them to different areas, has only strengthened their determination. He's like, they're literally sitting on each other's fucking lap every time they meet each other. Like, this has done nothing. And then he says, Scully's a problem. A much larger problem than you described. And then CSM says, every problem has a solution. And puts out his cigarette. Good old dry lips. But also Krycek has literally put into effect Scully's abduction.
Yeah.
I said, Krycek, you little dick.
Yep.
And that's the episode. That's the episode. So we managed to get through that, even though it's been like a month since we wrote those notes. So I feel like we did not too bad. That's just an hour we're going in there. So what do you think of that episode, Emma? Where do you rank it in the grand scheme of things?
What we had so far.
So I feel like Host's number one.
Yeah, let's blow that. What was next? I put it above Little Green Men. Did I? What happened?
Can't
to
remember. Green Men? I can't remember. I feel like Little Green Men, Mulder and Scully, are apart from a lot of Little Green Men. So that kind of ruins it.
Yeah.
But it's also got some really good moments in it.
It's the Host.
Little Green Men. What else have we done? Blood.
Blood. All right. Okay. Above Blood.
Above Blood. I would maybe go Blood. Like, I'm going reverse order.
Yeah.
Blood, Host, Little Green Men. No. Blood, Sleepless, Little Green Men, Host.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Is that what we've done? Four episodes? Yeah, all right. So do you want to do the fans are out there?
So at Keller McPhee. Is Scully purposefully talking directly into Mulder's face as Krycek stands awkwardly nearby. She's 8 years old and I love it.
Claiming our territory. Yeah. She may as well just pissed on him.
Yeah. And then they go on to say that I love the way they both reject his handshake, like touching another agent would be cheating. And Mulder's little eye roll to let her know this was not his idea. Nobody could replace her. They're so cute. They are
cute. So cute.
And at Dina Retangri, I think I had trouble saying this last time, at Dina Retangri, I think that's how you pronounce it, says that Krycek does not appreciate being ditched like a bad date with
she
like a little
appreciate you.
Angry face. Yeah.
What's that from?
Drake and Josh.
Drake and Josh, I thought that. Eh? Appreciate you.
And then they say there's nothing straight about that boy.
Oh, definitely not. From the get-go, the fucking sexual tension between Mulder and Krycek. And it just gets worse and worse. But better and better, if you know what I mean.
Katie_Katie says, should be as fuck episode. Really love how much they miss each other.
Yeah.
Yeah. And @agent_Troy says she's so territorial. Like the second she sees Krycek, she's like, who the fuck are you? And what are you doing anywhere near my partner, my best friend, my beloved? Yeah. @emessenger922, I love that seafoam green shirt on Mulder. When I saw this the first time, 29 fucking years ago, with like a face. I felt bad for Krycek and then was so shocked when he was revealed to be the bad guy. As always, love the way Mulder and Scully find ways to keep working together.
Because he doesn't look like a bad boy in this. He looks too young. Whereas when he comes back later, you're like, then he's got the bad boy vibes.
Yeah. So @XFPekka says Mulder plus Krycek is clearly such an unholy partnership that does not catch on tape.
Yeah.
And then they said, sorry to hear we had such trouble with our recordings. Said, hang on. And we're
hopefully not this time though.
Yeah, we were hanging on by a thread at one point. And at Green Elf, Oz says, ooh, Rat Boy begins, and is shunned by Miss Dina Scully. Yes.
Yes.
Love Rat Boy.
Rat Boy.
Babe. Right, man.
Oh, dear. At Tam Talk just said, Crycheck! Exclamation mark. I think we've got them all after that point. Now it's time for...
Do you think I'm spooky?
So this week's spooky story comes from our very own famous Kathy G. So,
legend.
Kathy G says, hi ladies, I have a spooky story for you. This actually happened to my husband. He's the Mulder to my Scully. So cute. He believes everything, whereas I'm pretty skeptical. One night he was on the computer downstairs in our house when he saw a glowing orb come through the wall and move through the room toward the front of the house. Mm. What really caught his attention was the dog, who had been asleep, immediately woke and alerted following the movement of this presence through the room. Nah, I hate when the dog's like, what the fuck do you see that I don't? Yeah. He didn't sense any danger or darkness, and the dog didn't growl or seem concerned. But it was clear they both noticed something. Both noticed the same thing. My husband told me about the experience and I nodded and smiled. She's like, sure, honey. Yeah. But then I mentioned it to my friend who lives in the property behind us because I know she's sensitive to phenomena and I am not. Also, thanks for making me see phenomena after a few glasses of wine. Not easy. She said she wasn't going to mention it because she knows I'm not a believer. But for the past several days, there has been a pathway running across our property, across her property and mine, through my house that spirits had been following. I'd be like, well, thank you. I will never sleep again. Yeah. She assured me that it was a positive occurrence. I'd be like, sure.
Yeah,
and nothing malevolent. And so many words, Kathy G. Come on, you know we're drunk by now. And that it was temporary. But she had seen the same orbs making their way along the path that ran through my yard and the house. I don't know what any of this means. I think it means you should sell your house.
But yeah, I think you should move.
And it's not something I experienced myself, but the fact that these two people that I trusted both experienced the same thing makes me think I should open myself up to extreme possibilities. Not like the Excels.
Yeah, that's good.
That's good.
It's such a good one.
Oh, good story. Thank you, Kathy G.
Thank you.
And that's it. So next time, join us for Dwayne Barry. It's going to be a good one.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a solid, hard episode. Yeah. So that's all from us this time. Don't forget, you can follow us on Twitter at The MSR Files Pod, or you can follow us on Instagram or TikTok at The MSR Files Podcast, or you can follow the invite link in any of our episodes to join us on Discord. We'll see you next time for Dwayne Barry.
Boop, boop.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Yeah.